Health and Social Services Committee is now will now come to order. It is 3:05 p.m. on Thursday, April 12th in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Tarr, Representative Johnston, and myself, Representative Sponholz, Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Thanks to Butch Carber, the House Secretary from Records, and Max Stanley from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. Today we're going to be hearing from the Department of Health and Social Services on the potential health impacts of climate change. And we are going to start our presentation today with Sarah Yoder, the Environmental Public Health Manager with the Division of Public Health, and Dr. Joe McLaughlin, State Epidemiologist, also with Public Health. You want to come forward?
Good afternoon. For the record, this is Sarah Yoder with the Alaska Division of Public Health, and I'm the Acting Environmental Public Health Program Manager.
And this is Dr. Joe McLaughlin. I am the Chief of the Alaska Section of Epidemiology.
All right, welcome. And we have Ms. Jill Lewis, Deputy Director of Public Health, here in the room. Advancing slides. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I can put myself on the record, although I don't really plan to say anything.
All right, please proceed with your presentation.
Do we have the PowerPoint up? I don't think we have the PowerPoint queued up.
I kind of feel that they do, but I'm not sure.
I thought this was like a serious thing you had to tell me.
It is.
I need to tell you.
It is serious.
It could be. It's true.
It could be. But I mean, nothing's worse than stinky socks.
Maybe we'll go at ease. Oh my God. Thank you to Representative Tarr and Judy Jessen for technical assistance today.
I can't remember if that one's supposed to work, but you got the arrow.
I got the arrow.
Yeah.
All right, you can go ahead and proceed now, Ms. Yoder.
Great, thank you. So today I'll be presenting about a report published by the Division of Public Health, published in January 2018, titled The Assessment of the Potential Health Impacts of Climate Change in Alaska. Next slide, please. Before I get into the details of the report, I'd like to provide a quick overview of what we'll be discussing today. First, I will present about health impact assessment, which is also referred to as HIA, because a report from the Division of Public Health followed the framework of a health impact assessment. Then, I will briefly present a summary of the observed and predicted changes in the environment and discuss how those changes could lead to potential health impacts in Alaska. Finally, I'll close with some examples of monitoring and adaptation strategies related to human health. Next slide, please. So I mentioned that this report followed the framework of a health impact assessment, or HIA. What is an HIA? It is a preventative health report which informs decision makers and other stakeholders, such as communities, of the potential health effects of proposed projects, policies, or programs. The ultimate goal of an HIA is to minimize adverse health effects and maximize health benefits. Next slide, please. Health impact assessments are also useful for proposals that fall outside the traditional health arenas, such as transportation and resource development, which are topics we've previously conducted HIAs for. But it's also useful for climate change. While looking at climate change isn't as clear-cut as a proposed project, it can still be assessed through adapting the health impact assessment methodology. Next slide, please. So you may be wondering what prompted this health impact assessment on climate change and human health. So the third national climate assessment was released in 2014. The assessment detailed climate change predictions and has specific chapters focusing on potential environmental impacts in Alaska, as well as potential impacts for human health and indigenous populations. The national assessment inspired us to develop an in-depth report that would tie together these themes to serve as a resource for Alaska. Next slide, please. So for those who may be following along on the phone, we are now on slide 6. The purpose of this health impact assessment was to add health-specific information to the climate change conversation. The health impact assessment also intended to provide a broad overview of the range of potential adverse impacts of climate change on human health in Alaska, as well as to present examples of strategies for communities and decision makers to consider, and to review existing literature and apply that information to human health in Alaska. Next slide, please. It is important to note that there are some areas not addressed by this HIA. In particular, the HIA was not intended to present any new models of climate change, make new predictions for climate change in Alaska, or offer an opinion about current predictions. Additionally, the potential beneficial health impacts of climate change were not addressed in this report. Are there any questions at this point?
No.
Okay. So on slide 8, before we could look at potential health impacts, we had to form a clear picture of what changes have already occurred and what are predicted to occur in the environment. We organized the findings by 7 environmental indicators. They were temperature, precipitation, weather, sea ice, glaciers, permafrost, and sea level. In the report, you will see each indicator discussed in detail for Alaska. And again, this is a compilation of available studies, not new predictions generated by the Division of Public Health. Next slide, please. So you may be very familiar with the predicted environmental changes for Alaska, but briefly, Alaska may experience increased annual temperatures ranging from 2 to 4 degrees by 2035. Increased precipitation and increased heavy precipitation events for drier summers. Increased storm intensity, which could lead to issues of storm surges and flooding. Increased sea levels. Decreased sea ice. You may have seen the article in the Anchorage Daily News today that reported the amount of sea ice off of Western Alaska coast this spring was the lowest in more than 150 years of record keeping. In addition to the sea ice indicator, we also looked at continued glacial recession, and decreased permafrost. The permafrost boundary may shift hundreds of miles northward by the end of the century. The timing of these predicted changes differs, ranging from already occurring to decades in the future. Also, the scale of the predicted changes differs by region. For example, temperatures in the interior, such as in Fairbanks, may increase more quickly than in Juneau.
Ms. Yoder?
Yes.
This is Representative Sponholz. I thought I heard you say drier summers when you were referencing the precipitation. Could you describe that a little bit more?
Yes, to the chair, Ms. Sponholz. While the predictions are for increased precipitation, that's mostly constrained to winter and springtime, less so much for summer. In addition to less precipitation in the summer, there's also predicted increased evaporation of what water is, in surface water sources due to the increased temperatures.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Nope, doesn't look like it.
Okay, so next slide, slide 10. So now we'll get to the part of the talk focused on potential human health impacts. This image, which was presented in the National Climate Assessment, demonstrates the complex relationship between the climate drivers, such as the indicators I previously mentioned, the environment, and health outcomes. The relationship between climate and a specific health outcome isn't always direct. For example, increased annual temperatures may not directly impact health, but in the right context, factors such as the age of a person, housing type, geography, and poverty could lead to a person eventually experiencing negative health effects from that increase in temperature. So I'll discuss some specific potential health outcomes in the next several slides. Next slide, please. We relied on the health impact assessment methodology to provide an organizational framework to systematically consider the wide range of potential health impacts. We refer to this organizational framework as health effect categories. The health effect categories considered in this health impact assessment included mental health and well-being, accidents and injuries, exposure to potentially hazardous materials, food, nutrition, and subsistence, infectious diseases, chronic diseases, water and sanitation, and healthcare delivery. We will not be able to discuss every potential human health impact due to time, so I will highlight several key potential impacts in each health effect category.
Ms. Yoder?
Yes.
Before you move on, Representative Sullivan Leonard has a question.
Okay.
Ms. Yoder, do you have information that pertains to regional areas of the state that maybe are more affected than others? And just to give you an example, when I moved from Anchorage to the Mat-Su Valley in 1996, it was known to be very wet, a lot of snow in the Mat-Su Valley, and as things have changed, it's become a little bit drier. But what we're finding is that as the winds are whipping up through the Mat-Su Valley, a lot of the glacial silt comes off the glaciers, which has caused a real interesting trend for a lot of folks with the sense of increase in asthma, allergies, difficulty in breathing, and especially difficulty for our seniors. So are you seeing this in a regional way, and do you have it broken down that way per region?
Yes, through the chair to Representative Sullivan Leonard. We do provide some discussion of what might happen in different regions. We categorize mostly on coastal, interior, and northern, but we recognize that even within those regions, there will be differences. What might happen in one part of the interior might not quite be the same for other regions. And since this report was focused statewide, we didn't really get to more of a community-specific level when we were talking about environmental change, but we do provide resources where someone may be able to find that information. Does that address your question?
Through the chair. Yeah, I'd like additional information and resources if you could. I would think you'd want to highlight the state as a whole in various regions and not just coastal, right?
Yes, through the chair to Representative Sullivan Leonard. We focus on Alaska predictions. We also do talk not just about coastal, but about interior and northern change. And where the data is available, we do talk about what might be observed in southeast. We do talk about some examples relevant to the Anchorage Matsu area as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
So we will move to the next slide, slide 12. The first health tech category we considered. So in terms of mental health and well-being, climate change could impact health by causing increased psychosocial distress, such as anxiety or depression, due to the changing environment. For example, people may have increased stress and anxiety if there is an imminent need for the relocation of their community, if thawing permafrost has caused infrastructure damage, or if there is an increase in extreme weather events and wildfires near the residence. People may also be distressed by a changing way of life and the uncertainty of future environmental conditions. Solastalgia, which is defined as a sense of loss caused by environmental change, may also be experienced to different degrees. A sense of loss due to the relocation of one's community is an example of this, as is the loss of an ability to partake in one's preferred recreational activities. Maladaptive coping behaviors, such as substance abuse or suicidality, could also develop as unwanted changes in the environment occur. Next slide, please. So now on to the next health effect category. Climate change could lead to increased accidents and injuries due to factors or events such as infrastructure damage, wildfires, extreme weather events such as storm surges, flooding, which includes coastal and river flooding, as well as inland flooding from storms and unsafe ice conditions. This image shows a damaged roadway in Alaska, and infrastructure damage such as this could cause a motor vehicle accident. Damaged airstrips, buildings, and other infrastructure could also cause human injury. Next slide, please. So climate change could also result in an increased exposure to some potentially hazardous materials and related health outcomes. There could be increased cardiovascular and respiratory disease due to increased air pollution, such as that from wildfire smoke. The image on the right shows the impact of wildfire smoke in Fairbanks during a summer day in 2004. Climate change could also increase exposure to potentially hazardous materials via infrastructure damage, like a pipeline bursting due to changing permafrost conditions or storm events, as well as due to changing shipping routes leading to more marine vessels in waterways. Next slide, please. In terms of food, nutrition, and subsistence, there could be a decrease in subsistence food consumption and food security, as well as a change in food distribution and subsistence patterns. An example of this is a reported increased difficulty by some Alaskans in accessing preferred hunting grounds due to changing permafrost and uncertain ice conditions. Subsistence food consumption may also be impacted by the increased difficulty of finding a specific resource, such as caribou, as the natural environment changes. Next slide, please. So for non-communicable and chronic diseases, climate change could lead to increased allergies and respiratory illness. Ways in which this could happen include increased pollen counts and wildfire smoke. You may recall that we had several summers, particularly in 2014 and 2016, where there were record high birch pollen counts measured in Fairbanks and Anchorage. High pollen counts typically leads to more people seeking care for allergy symptoms, as well as exacerbations of pre-existing conditions, such as asthma. And a slide that missed the slide deck is the topic of infectious diseases. Climate change could lead to cases of diseases not yet locally acquired, such as West Nile virus and Lyme disease, but several factors, such as the correct insect population and the right sustained air temperatures, must align for that to occur. An example of an observed infectious disease change in Alaska is the 2004 Vibrio parahemolyticus outbreak, which was associated with the consumption of raw oysters harvested in abnormally warm summer waters in southeast Alaska. Next slide, please. And for the last health effect category considered, climate change can cause increased water and sanitation infrastructure damage. This can happen in a variety of ways, including damaged systems from permafrost changes and increased water turbidity due to erosion and storm events. A lack of water and sanitation in a household could lead to health effects. In Kivalina, for example, storm damage resulted in the closure of a washateria in 2004, and this prolonged closure may have been associated with an increased rate of respiratory infections in the community. Are there any questions at this point?
No.
Okay. So now that we've covered some of the potential health impacts of climate change in Alaska, there are more than discussed today, we can consider the potential scope of these impacts. Next slide, please. If you are familiar with health impact assessments, you know that there is typically a rating and prioritization of potential health impacts. Because this HIA considers impacts statewide and each community will likely experience climate change differently, this HIA instead proposes a ranking methodology that can be adapted by communities and stakeholders. You'll find this table on page 1 of the handout, which may be a little easier to read. So the report provides a system that considers the potential timing and magnitude of the impact by looking at dimensions such as time to impact, geographic extent, number of people directly impacted, number of people impacted who might experience serious health problems, and the resources needed to adapt to or respond to the impact. And as the timing and magnitude of each impact is more pronounced, the color associated gets a little darker, so you can develop what we have nicknamed a heat map for potential impact, which I will provide a picture of on the next slide. So next slide, please. The next table, which is very large and hard to show on the slide, is on page 2 of the handout. This table demonstrates what it might look like when the system shown in the previous slide is used to consider each identified potential health impact one by one. The table provides a visual guide to which potential health impacts may be more pertinent to a community, as well as which impacts may need more attention and may need higher prioritization to address. Those are typically the darker colored impacts created in this table. So a rating system, such as this notional example, can be useful when considering what can be done to avoid or lessen potential health impacts. Okay, next slide. So knowing which impacts may need prioritization can help determine appropriate monitoring recommendations, meaning identifying data we can use to improve situational awareness of changes in specific indicators. The report provides examples of relevant health and environmental indicators that can be monitored for each potential health impact. For example, hospital admissions related to poor air quality conditions, soil temperature data to assess permafrost change, and information from the Local Environmental Observer, or LEO, network are all potential things to monitor. The LEO network is an online platform developed by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium for local observers to connect with topical experts about unusual animal, environmental, and weather events. Many of the LEO members are based in Alaska, but the network has expanded to many other countries across the globe and is a great monitoring tool to consider. The report also identifies existing monitoring resources, for example, what state databases may already exist, and suggests additional monitoring needs. Next slide, please. Slide 21. So this slide, which corresponds to page 3 of the handout, shows a portion of the monitoring recommendation table that can be found in the report. You can see that it outlines the potential health impact, the column on the far left, identifies relevant indicators, the column in the middle shows the health and environmental indicators, and then identifies relevant, and then provides examples of where that data may exist if it is already being collected in the state. And that is the final column in the table. Okay. Next slide, please. In addition to monitoring data, the report suggests adaptation strategies. For the purpose of this report, we consider climate change adaptation as adjusting to climatic changes in an effort to decrease negative impacts and increase potential opportunities. The report provides examples of adaptation strategies with a health focus. Next slide, please. So this first adaptation strategies table, found on page 4 of the handout, details some overarching adaptation strategies that communities and other stakeholders may consider in terms of health. They are not tied to an impact identified in health effects category, but rather suggest general strategies, such as developing and participating in local and statewide climate change advisory groups, offering community members opportunities to relay their concerns about climate change and propose solutions, and conducting risk communication, health education, and community outreach as needed. And next slide, please. So the health impact assessment also suggests adaptation strategies specific to the impacts identified in each health effect category. Specific strategies include reviewing architecture and engineering designs to ensure that planning infrastructure can withstand changes to the underlying permafrost, developing community response plans for wildfires, and supporting successful community-based mental health wellness programs. Next slide, please. So this is another table that is very large in our report. So this slide only shows a portion of the adaptation strategies specific to each health effects category, some of which I mentioned in the previous slide. This table, the portion of this table can be found on page 5 of the handout. And next slide, please. So I wanted to show some examples of adaptation strategies that are already occurring in Alaska to show what adaptation might look like at various organizational levels. One statewide example is the Alaska Climate Change Strategy and Climate Action for Leadership Team. You may be familiar with this as it came from Administrative Order 289, which was signed by Governor Walker last fall. This strategy creates a framework for Alaskans to build a strategic response to climate change, and it calls for state departments to review their previous work on climate change and to identify immediate adaptation and response actions. And actually, the Climate Action for Leadership team is meeting today in Fairbanks to discuss potential Alaska climate change policy. Next slide, please. Another example, this time at the regional level, is Adapt Alaska, which was created by the Alaska Sea Grant. This effort creates a discussion space for Alaska communities, tribes, and nonprofits with the goal of allowing residents to share information and learn from each other about what they are experiencing and how they can adapt. Adapt Alaska suggests tools and provides resources to address a variety of impacts, including health. Next slide, please. A community-level adaptation example is the work done by the Native Village of Georgetown on a climate vulnerability assessment that was released in 2017. This assessment documents climate-related changes and trends in and around Georgetown, and it was commissioned by the Georgetown Tribal Council. It includes a section on health impacts. The image shows one of the health impact tables provided in the assessment. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium also has conducted assessments in 15 different coastal and North Slope communities. These assessments focus on describing climate impacts observed in the communities. Next slide, please. So that was a lot of information about the HIA, the relationship of climate and health in Alaska, and strategies that communities and other stakeholders may consider. I'd like to summarize this talk by re-emphasizing that given the broad scope of climate change, there is a wide range of potential adverse health impacts in Alaska. There are strategies that can be implemented to avoid or minimize these potential health impacts. The report, or HIA, provides guidance on identifying relevant adverse health impacts in communities and then developing community-specific monitoring and adaptation strategies. And next slide, please. So thank you for your time and the invitation to speak with you today. Are there any questions from the committee?
Are there any questions for Ms. Yoder? All right, Representative Sullivan Leonard has a question.
Ms. Yoder, as data is being collected with regard to climate change, how much is being determined to be geographically and scientifically inclined for changes in our climate versus human change for Alaska?
Through the chair to Representative Sullivan Leonard, could you clarify what you mean? Are you asking about what is due to humans or what is just natural change for human populations?
Sure. I'm asking what is the scientific natural occurrence in the change of our environment versus impact by human interaction?
Okay, through the chair to Representative Sullivan Leonard. Our report focused primarily on just what is being predicted in terms of climate for Alaska using studies that were conducted nationally and in Alaska. We didn't focus on the cause of change, just that we are aware that models are saying there is, a prediction of an X increase in temperature in a certain part of the state. And so we focused on that rather than cause.
Okay, follow up, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay, I appreciate that. I just know in many, many years past when there were changes in the Alaskan coastal areas, communities were nomadic. And so they would move to different areas of the northern interior as they needed to. And now I think it's more difficult for them to do that. Anyway, it's just a comment, not a question. But thank you for your presentation.
All right. And we have a question from Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, it looks like in the regular course of your work, you were able to work on the report that did some of this cataloging. But then I'm just wondering, now that you've identified some of these risks, you know, near term, longer term, do you need to get specific funds to address some of them, or will this continue to be, in your position as the environmental program manager, part of your work? You know, sort of how does this all go forward?
Right, through the chair to Representative Tarr. For future efforts to continue, you know, to look at health and maybe adapt some adaptation strategies, it really should be up to the respective agencies and communities to develop their priorities. Additionally, the climate change strategy and climate action for Alaska leadership team may be a place better suited to determine funding and next steps based on their review of this report.
Yeah, please.
So then for your day-to-day work, will you continue working on researching, cataloging information about climate change and potential health impacts?
Yep, through the chair to Representative Tarr. As the acting environmental public health program manager, this climate change work is not my full-time responsibility, but I do pay attention to the new studies, new literature available, and we are compiling that data as it comes in.
One more?
Yeah.
And so thank you. That's what I was expecting, was that your work was much bigger than, you know, focusing on climate change. So it sounds like to the extent you can, you will be engaged in that. But is there anyone else at the Department of Health and Social Services that's in their job description to be thinking about climate-related health impacts?
Through the chair to Representative Carr, not to my knowledge, but I do, even when it's not related to this report, I am attending meetings through the governor's office and other related meetings for Arctic and climate. As well, Dr. Joe McLaughlin is involved in the climate work as well.
Thank you.
Sorry, forgot to mention, he's sitting right here, so.
Thank you.
All right, is there any more to the presentation, Ms. Yoder?
No, that is it for today.
All right. I had a couple of questions. It seems to me, this is Representative Sponholz, that at least the presentation on the report today is fairly high level. Am I correct in assuming that what you're doing is sort of trying to have a fairly high level of understanding of what the issues are so that you're ready to identify a more specific strategy that the Department of Health and Social Services needs to try to execute with regard to a specific kind of health impact?
So to the chair, this report is, as you said, it is a high level discussion of potential human health impacts, and it is intended to be guidance for communities and other stakeholders to take and help develop their response to climate change.
Okay, and are you participating or anybody from health participating in the just monitoring the governor's climate change leadership team?
To the chair, yes. So I have attended meetings for this team as I am able. I was called, Joe and I actually both called in this morning to observe what was being discussed. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to stay as involved as we can.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time to present this information to us and for bringing the report to our attention. There's a couple of us, I think, that will be following up and reading it in more detail. Thank you both to you, Ms. Yoder, and to Joe McLaughlin for joining us today. Next week on Tuesday, the House HES Committee will be hearing two bills. First is Senate President Kelly's SB 198, and the other is SB 208 by Senate Democratic Leader Gardner, which is Sobriety Awareness Month. And then on Thursday, we may have a hearing depending on, any pending referrals that may come through as they're referred. The time is now 3:44, and this hearing of House Health and Social Services Committee is adjourned.